right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. On the line, my good friend Sandy Williams. And before we went to break, I was saying to Sandy, as he was explaining, you know, what inflation is. And so because of our fears, we are willing to overpay something that doesn't have the value. The value of it is not worth what we are willing to pay because of our fear. And that can never be. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily an invalid fear, because in certain circumstances, the price is predictably going to go up in the future. If you've got an ongoing shortage and an ongoing surplus of money available to buy it, then it likely is going to go up. And so it's not irrational to buy it today rather than tomorrow, particularly if you can borrow the money to buy it today and the interest rate that you're going to pay to buy it is low. Lower than the perceived inflation rate. So right now you can borrow money for less than 8%, and if the inflation continues at the 8% level, you're better off borrowing money today so you can buy it today and pay the money back, and you'll end up having gotten the object, whatever you bought, cheaper than you would.
Yeah, but Sandy, won't that eventually change? I mean, it's not going to be possible that the interest that the rate of borrowing money is going to remain cheaper than the stuff you're looking to buy.
Exactly. So if inflation, here are the steps that a government takes to try and contain inflation. One, they try and create an atmosphere in which inflation won't occur. So we've got the Federal Reserve out there saying, look, our main fight is against inflation. We're going to try and keep inflation at the lowest rate that's needed to make employment full, so like 2% or 2.5%. That's optimal inflation, no more than that. And if the world believes that, then that helps keep the psychology of this inflation psychology from happening. But then when prices start going up pretty fast, then the next thing a government can say is, look, this is a temporary phenomenon. It's not going to last. Don't you worry. Prices a year from now are not going to be a lot higher than they are now. They're just higher now because of this temporary shortage. Well, that's what we've been hearing for the last months. And if that's true, then people should sit on their money and just wait for it to go away. It was true for the lumber shortage. You know, lumber went way, way up 9 months ago, and it came down substantially. So there is volatility. And if you can persuade people that this is just a temporary increase in price and not to worry, just keep your money and buy things as you normally would, that can defeat inflation. But if it starts coming true month after month, people will start buying things now because they say, you know what, I don't believe you, and I'm going to buy it now because I really predict it's going to go up. And once that cycle starts, it's very hard to stop the prices from going up because everyone's doing this month after month. They're buying it now to avoid buying it later. And so how do you defeat that? Well, that's when you start raising interest rates, because in order to accomplish that buy now instead of waiting, people are borrowing money, making this interest rate calculation I just described. So the government tries to take that interest rate calculation away from them by saying, we're going to raise interest rates so that it's no longer possible for you to make that calculation that I'm better off borrowing money today to buy it because it's going to get more expensive in the future. So that means interest rates have to go up above 8%, for instance, in the near term in order to defeat an 8% inflation rate in terms of the psychology. And that's what's happened in the past. You know, the interest rates get driven up to try and slow down the ability of people to buy things if they're going to borrow to buy it. And the other thing that does is when interest rates go up, you get bigger rewards for saving money. Right now, if you save money, you go and get a CD, a deposit certificate, and you earn 1%. But if you earned 7% for that, then you might be inclined to save your money, because what the heck, I can save my money. I can still buy that thing next year and I'll have the right amount of money. And if prices didn't go up, then I've got more money because I've put my money aside. It's earning more interest than the inflation rate, so I'm better off. So,
but you know,
those are the things that happen. So interest rates become a very strong tool to fight inflation once the inflationary psychology gets a grip.
See, Sandy, though, but from the perspective of the average American who doesn't have, you know, $1,000 in the bank, they this is a different reality for them. For those who can, you know, navigate it, that's a little bit different from those who are living on a day-to-day basis. This is a horrible time for them and a frightening time.
Well, of course, and that's, of course, the people who don't have much money, in order to accomplish this, buy it now rather than wait. If you have to buy the washing machine and you want to get it right away, or your car is broken down, you need to get a new car, you borrow money to do it. So this interest rate hike, in order to defeat inflation, has the biggest impact on people who use consumer credit. And consumer credit can get very expensive, in the circumstance of inflation and interest rates going up. So the trouble with Tom, Dick, and Mary in a period of inflation is they suffer that problem of very high interest rates for consumer credit, and their salaries don't go up as fast as the inflation rate, and so they begin to lose real dollars in terms of their earning potential, their purchasing potential out of their earnings.
You know, Sandy, go ahead.
Well, that's what the Biden administration has to worry about, because, you know, in the early stage of this shortage for labor, the shortage of labor had the opportunity to create higher wages, and the wages were going up at a clip that was commensurate with or better than the inflation rate, and the inflation rate was viewed as temporary. So if wages went up and stuck, and the inflation rate was temporary, then real wages were going up during this time frame. But if we get into a period of substantial inflation, it's going to be very hard for real, and by real wages, I mean adjusted for inflation, so that, you know, there's a thing called the Consumer Price Index, and you can look at, you know, $10,000 earned in 1970 was far different than, and far more valuable than $10,000 earned in 2022. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of real dollars.
So let me paint an all too familiar picture. I was talking with a young person who is, you know, drives a vehicle that, you know, is probably 12 years old, maybe 14 years old. Got a big tank. Person drives from Milwaukee out to Oconomowoc, trying to do the right thing, working. The gas can't afford to buy a new vehicle or a smaller vehicle. Working every day, trying to do the right thing. The money that the person is making is right now, with the gasoline being about $5 a gallon, is taking and putting him in a horrific position, because he has to drive back and forth out to Oak Creek daily to work. And yet the gas prices, this is devastating and life-changing to many people, Sandy, with where we are.
Well, it is. One thing about gas prices that's sort of interesting, we talk about $4.50 gas as being historically very, very high priced. And in nominal dollars, meaning in looking at it in the value in 2022 dollars and what they are, $4.50 is a high price. But in real dollars, the price of gasoline, I had my grandson look at this a couple of days ago. I was driving home from school, and the price of gas in 1975 was, I think, $1.73 a gallon. And if you take the consumer price index and see how much the dollar has inflated since then, in real dollars in 2022, that gallon of gas would cost $4.75. So a $4.75 gallon of gas in 2022 is exactly the same relative cost to a person as the price of gas was in 1975. So we should think about things in real dollars before we talk about how extravagantly expensive something's become because the dollar has depreciated by deflation a great deal over time. But that being said, that's no comfort to someone who has a big car and a salary that hasn't grown as fast as inflation since 1975 and has this problem. And you're right, inflation takes a very big bite out of Tom, Dick, and Mary. They're the ones who are least able to deal with the consequences of living costs inflating.
You know, Sandy, and again, we're looking at it from the perspective of American citizens, but globally, this is going to be also devastating to nations, right?
Yeah, although the price of gas in the United States is always
I don't mean solely just gas, price. Sandy. Sandy, I mean just all of this, and not just the the cost of oil, but everything else.
Oh yeah, I mean the depression level recession that Russia's experiencing now and will experience is contagious, and it affects everyone with whom they do business, but. It's inflation has the same kind of devastating effect on economies ultimately in terms of shrinking dollar values and shrinking currency values one against the other. It causes destabilization of the world economy generally, and we're at the same time we're talking about shrinking the global economy and cutting it up into its parts. Cutting the global economy into parts is an inflationary action in and of itself. So, I think the world economy and the world financial leaders have to worry about inflation a great deal because I think there are so many factors right now that are leading towards potentially very high inflation that they need to worry about it.
So, Sandy, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Sandy Williams is on the line. We'll be right back.